This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now, back to Frank Cusimano from the McBride & Son Home Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.
And welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box, live from the McBride & Son Home Studio. By the way, I failed to mention, like a bad radio host last segment, that our listeners can get involved through our Lion's Choice text line at 855-282-8255. But instead, we're going to go to the Winning Streak listener line at 855-282-8255, where Brian Walton, who operates the CardinalNation.com, it's through Scout.com, joins us. Brian, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, very good. I have a quick question, though, before we get to the Cardinal discussion. I noticed that your Twitter handle, it's at @B_Walton. Now, for you, that coincides with the initials of a very popular, if not at times enigmatic and differing broadcaster in Bill Walton, the personal favorite of mine. I do wonder during college basketball season how many times do people think that that's Bill Walton's Twitter account and you get hate stuff.
I've definitely gotten tweets, and usually I call him, my cousin from the wrong side of the family. But yeah, a lot of people do confuse Bill and Brian.
All right, so Brian, you are you keep a good close eye on the minor league system of the St. Louis Cardinals, and the major league club off to a pretty bad start there, 4-9. So if we look ahead, maybe not so much towards this year, but one thing that caught my eye this morning, I was on Twitter and I noticed that your site wrote a piece on Oscar Mercado, who has reworked his swing. We hear a lot about, we know for the foreseeable future that two of the three outfield spots are taken by Stephen Piscotty and by Dexter Fowler. There's a third one that might be up in the air depending on the status of Randall Grichuk. And we've heard a lot about Sierra, who is down in AA. But Oscar Mercado, who I believe last year was switched to the outfield, could be a bit of a wild card. What kind of year is he having thus far?
You know, Oscar Mercado's an interesting story. The Cardinals paid like $1.5 million to get him out of a Tampa high school, and at that point he was a hotshot shortstop. And Mercado reached high A, Palm Beach, last year and pretty much bottomed out defensively and offensively. And he was to the point we completely took him off our top 50 prospect list. They went to him and said, hey, you're a great athlete. Let's try center field. So they moved him to center field, and he took the position defensively. Then the next step was, okay, now let's see if we can rework your swing and, get you to the point where you can become an effective offensive player as well. And they worked hard on that this spring, and the results are showing. It's early on, but Mercado, I think it's important, the point that you made, which was Mercado did well enough in spring training that he made Double-A Springfield ahead of Magnery Sierra, who was the guy who was the talk of Major League camp the first couple of weeks. So that tells you what they think about Mercado and the progress he's made.
Brian, you mentioned the shortstops for the Cardinals. Right now it's solidified by Aledmys Diaz. I believe Derek Gould mentioned on this station not too long ago that he has never seen one position, or at least a shortstop position, so stocked of talent than what the Cardinals have right now among the shortstops. Who among those do you feel has the best potential maybe to make the team the soonest?
Well, there's a couple of guys that are close. One, Paul DeJong, who's a guy that was drafted, a college player that was drafted 2 years ago, who moved from third base to shortstop. And he's playing shortstop every day at AAA Memphis, has a really good power bat. The question has been, can he hit for average? And he does strike out a lot. Well, so far he's batting .317. Now, it's only 12 games, but DeJong is a guy who could come up and, in worst case, could be sort of the next generation Greg Garcia, which is a guy that can come off the bench and play multiple positions on the infield. Best case for him, that he could become a starting shortstop, although I think that's a question, certainly. Down at High A Palm Beach is Edmundo Sosa, who's a young Panamanian, and he's batting .300 in the early going down in Palm Beach, and Palm Beach is a tough place to hit, so it'll be worth watching to see if Sosa can improve the bat. And then, of course, the number one shortstop in the Cardinals system is Delvin Perez, who was their first rounder last year, but we're talking about a kid who's still in his teens and is down working in extended spring training with Jose Oquendo. I'm going to be down there in about 2 weeks, and I'm definitely going to look in and see what kind of progress Perez is making, because there was a question whether he might be able to leap all the way up to Peoria to start the season. They decided not to do that, give him a little more time to continue to improve.
And Brian, on Delvin Perez, I know he's of great interest to Cardinal fans who
saw him get drafted in the first round, slip all the way to the Cardinals because of the PED situation, and fell into the Cardinals' lap, really. And he's a guy that, as far as position players go, one of the more exciting names that Cardinal fans have to look forward to. It's so early in his career, and he's such a young player, but what do you think an ideal progression through the system would look like for Perez over the next few years?
Well, I think what you'd like to see this season, if either they'll move him into Peoria in a month or so, or they may wait and put him in, say, Johnson City or more likely State College, which are short-season teams. If he plays well there, there's certainly a chance that he can end up in Peoria before the season's out. Then that puts him, you know, on pace to play maybe another part season in High A, and he could even get to Double A by the end of next year. And that's an aggressive approach, but if that's the case, anytime anybody's in Double A, they're really a phone call away. Yeah, there's Triple A to progress through, but there have been times in the past where the Cardinals haven't hesitated to reach down to Double A to grab a guy. So I'm not suggesting that we're going to see Delvin Perez in the major leagues next year, but I think an aggressive promotion, if he does well, you know, he could see Double A in 2018.
Brian Walton, the CardinalNation.com through Scott.com, joining us here in the Hollywood Casino Press Box here on the all-new 590 The Fan. Brian, switching over to the pitching side, we had on this show Bill DeWitt Jr. on shortly after opening day, and we were discussing some of the prospects just because he is the owner, actually has a pretty good idea as to who was coming up through the pipeline for the Cardinals. And one thing he mentioned was, if you have a chance, head down to Springfield because you're kind of going to get a look at maybe the future rotation, or at least a stacked young rotation for the Springfield Cardinals, led by Jack Flaherty, who had another fantastic start just the other night, has an ERA below one through three starts. How special is Jack Flaherty, and do you think there's a chance we might see him on the Major League club at some point this season?
Jack Flaherty is an interesting guy because he was a top pick, and he got to Palm Beach last year, and it's a league where pitchers normally excel. And he had a good season, but for a guy who you're expecting, you know, to show first-round talent, he didn't have that kind of year, to the point where Baseball America actually took him out of their Cardinals top 10 and said, hey, you know, this guy needs to, you know, prove to us that he's got what it takes. Well, so far through three starts, as you said, 19 strikeouts in 21 in the third innings, just two walks, one earned run. Jack Flaherty is the kind of guy who does everything well. He doesn't have a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, but he's got four pitches, and he has location. And he's the kind of guy that they may want to try to keep starting if they can, rather than bring him up to St. Louis and be a reliever. The guy who's more likely to come up to St. Louis quickly is another guy in that rotation, Sandy Alcantara. And Sandy's a tall kid. He's about 6'5", very thin, and can throw the ball 100 miles an hour. And, you know, he's the kind of guy you might bring in a relief mode if the Cardinals need help down the road. So I think we might see him in St. Louis before Flaherty. But, you know, ultimately, they're both the kind of guys that could be in the rotation for a long time.
Speaking of another arm that currently in the minor leagues but expected to make his way to St. Louis soon is Tyler Lyons, has had a couple of really good rehab assignments, and then his last one was just a little more so-so. What is your view of Lyons as he's progressed through this rehab from the knee injury, and how you think he'll fit on the Major League club here within the next, probably the next week or so?
Well, it's a really, really interesting question because, you know, Tyler Lyons, as you know, came up through, as most guys did, Trevor Rosenthal did too, you know, come up through the system as a starter. They like guys to start because they can get the innings, they can get the pitches, they can get their workload in. But then when they get to the major leagues, they get moved to relief, which is what we saw with Lyons. Well, the Cardinals have had him starting in Memphis, and not just pitching a couple innings, but they've had him pitching five innings, six innings. So what we're seeing, and by the way, he's been exceptional. 14 strikeouts in 14 innings, just two walks, just two earned runs. So the question is going to be, you know, if a couple members of this rotation continue to have trouble, you know, how would they be tempted to put Tyler Lyons in, you know, in the starting rotation in St. Louis? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but he's definitely positioned to be the next guy to step in if they need someone, because the guy we thought that was going to play that role, Luke Weaver, it hurt his back and is on the disabled list, and so, you know, he's basically out of action. So if we needed a sixth starter, if the St. Louis needed a sixth starter today, you know, Tyler Lyons is positioned to be that guy.
Brian, if you had to make a call on who might get sent out when Tyler Lyons makes his way to the big club, who would be the guy you'd predict to be that player?
Well, Miguel Sokolovich, you know, had been pitching pretty well, and then this last time out in New York, he got bombed the other night. And he, you know, unfortunately, the only guy that has minor league options in the bullpen right now that it would be reasonable is Matt Bowman. Unfortunately, he's the best reliever they have, so they're not going to, well, not unfortunately, but in this case, unfortunately, because they're not going to send him out. So, you know, the other option would be to release a veteran, which they could do, saying a Jonathan Broxton, and eat his salary. So that's another possibility. I think those two are the guys kind of that are on the edge, Sokolovich and Broxton.
Brian, an issue for the Cardinals, not only this year, but has been a bit of an issue, maybe masked at times, since really 2014. They don't have what you might call either a cornerstone player or at least a heavily feared middle-of-the-order hitter. Cardinal hitters from 3 through 6 in the lineup have a 732 OPS since 2014. That is 26 in baseball. You mentioned some of the possible hot-hitting infield prospects in Paul DeJong and Delvin Perez, who is still a few years off. There's also Harrison Bader down in AAA Memphis. I ask, do you think the Cardinals have that next big middle-of-the-order hitter in their system, or is that something that you think John Mozeliak is going to have to go out shopping for at some point either this offseason or in that big offseason 2 years from now when Bryce Harper and Manny Machado hit the open market?
The last guy that I thought had that capability was unfortunately left us in passing. And I don't know that there's anybody, you know, in that system today who we can say is going to come in and be the next Albert Pujols or even the next Lance Berkman or Scott Rowland. And so, yeah, they may have to go on the free agent market or, you know, may make a trade because I don't see another Oscar Taveras in their system right now. At least that's close enough to the majors that we could say, wow, you know, this guy's got what it takes.
And then finally, just how do you make sense of this 4-9 start? Do you think this is just a bit of a false start for the Cardinals, or should there be a little more growing concern about, you know, people were optimistic, we're thinking 85 and above wins, maybe some even being overtly optimistic and thinking 90 wins? Are you beginning to think maybe take a step back, this might be 500 or below this season?
I'm not ready to go there yet. I was with the team in New York this weekend and, you know, spent a lot of time just watching and listening to, you know, what was going on in the clubhouse, you know, when the media was there and in the dugout. It's just, the team's not that bad, okay? We all know that. The question is, you know, are they good enough to compete for a wild card? And they've got to figure out a way to get some consistency. And I think it starts with consistency in the lineup and, you know, a greater expectation on what the guys' various roles are on the team. They've obviously got to get better relief pitching as well, but the starting pitching, you know, has been the thing that's quietly held them together so far.
That's Brian Walton, thecardinalnation.com. You can follow him on Twitter at @B_Walton. Please keep your Bill Walton thoughts to someone else, I suppose. I assure you hear more than enough of that already. Brian, we appreciate you coming onto the program today.
My pleasure as always.
That's Brian Walton, thecardinalnation.com. Some interesting thoughts there. Brendan, we've discussed with Frank a couple of times, and we've discussed ad nauseum almost off the air at times, about how this team does lack that middle-of-the-order thumper, and as Brian Walton said, there's not one really within the organization on the horizon, and that should lead to some interesting decisions by John Mozeliak if he tries to acquire one.
Sure, and this trade deadline period coming up within a few months could be that time if the Cardinals feel they're either desperate enough or that guy is on the trading block potentially available to them. We talked a couple of times about what that might look like and what position you might put a guy in if the Cardinals are committed to who they have at first base and they're still trying Colton Wong at second. It seems like migrating over to third base would make sense. And does a Todd Frazier or an Evan Longoria qualify as that kind of bat? And would the Cardinals have the pieces to make that deal? I think you probably, if you're going to maximize resources, would still have to ride the storm out maybe for one more year. And it's not something that the Cardinals typically do, but make a legitimate run at a guy like Machado and be willing to outbid everybody else. And that's going to be a monster contract, probably beyond our wildest imagination. But that's what it takes today in Major League Baseball in this current climate when you see guys like Adam Eaton, who's a good player. I don't know that he's a superstar great player, but he's a very, very good player. But even he is getting traded and commanding two top 50 prospects and then some. So in that climate, I think free agency might have to be the way to go if you're the Cardinals.
Maybe they just convince, once he's off the DL, Toronto just to send Josh Donaldson here.
Yeah, for, you know, you probably do, like, Tommy Pham.
2 and 10, they're not going
anywhere. You could probably do, like, Luke Weaver.
Salary dump.
And Matt, and they would want Matt Adams because they would need, like, a DH. So I think that's a pretty fair trade.
He did mention Scott Rolen. Those were the days when you can just not give up anyone. Those were the days of, like, the fake trades that get laughed at now.
Right.
That was Bud Smith and Polanco and Timlin for an all-star third baseman.
Yeah,
when
teams were desperate for money and so they had to clear some salary, and nowadays pretty much even the poor teams have money and nobody's making that kind of trade anymore. It's not Mozeliak is not going to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. He's going to have to give up some quality pieces if the Cardinals are to do it via the trade.
Catfish chiming in on the Lions Choice text line saying they could have signed Chris Davis for a reasonable term 2 years ago. What's he done since they passed? I think Chris Davis has been very much like Chris Davis. A lot of home runs, a lot of strikeouts. I'm not sure, though, I would necessarily qualify his contract as reasonable.
What did he sign for? I don't even remember what his deal was. I know that it was a piece that I was interested in the Cardinals going after at the time, and we also brought up Edwin Encarnacion multiple times, and he's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start, I've heard, this season. But, I mean, at some point, the Cardinals have to kind of go outside their comfort zone for that kind of player, and in the case, like if it's Encarnacion and then the guy kind of falls off the face of the earth and it doesn't work out, then it's probably benefit you that you didn't go after that guy because you didn't waste your money. But if there's the guy that they really think, and I think often that would trend younger, because if a guy's younger, you feel a little bit more confident in him long-term being able to produce for you, then the Cardinals, I think, eventually, within the next couple of years, have got to step out of their comfort zone to make that deal.
Chris Davis is in year two of a seven-year, $161 million contract with the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah.
Actually, this is surprising. Brendan, he's batting .317.
Yeah, they'll certainly take that. They'll certainly take that.
Very surprising.
I think that 7 years, so you've got five left after this one, that's a pretty hefty contract for a guy that profiles that way. I mean, you remember like Adam Dunn toward the end was just god-awful, and so you worry that a guy that's just so much predicated on the power and is already not an average hitter and not and is a strikeout guy, you wonder how he will profile toward the end of his career. But hey, if he's hitting over 300 right now, they'll take it.
Those of Thighs chiming in. Cardinals dug themselves in a hole when they promised Matt Carpenter first base. You weren't necessarily anticipating this, but we've discussed that Carpenter's at first base simply because that's the position he's least bad at defensively.
He's
not a very good defensive third baseman. He's not a very good defensive second baseman. So they kind of had to put him at first base, almost in a similar situation the Cardinals were at with Albert Pujols. They just put him at first base because that's probably the position he can do the least amount of, have the least amount of issues with defensively. But with Colton Wong off to a rough start, albeit having a big day yesterday, with Johnny Peralta off to a pretty horrendous start, it does seem like that they are in a bit of a pickle where to put players defensively at the moment.
And first of all, it's worth mentioning that Carpenter out of the lineup yesterday, and he may not be quite ready for the lineup again today after the swollen finger situation. But when you look at, we're talking about Matt Adams in left field, this situation reminds me of that, whereas if you're going to move Carpenter from first base to a position that he's much worse defensively, especially second base where you have a good defensive alternative, the guy that's replacing him at first base had better be a thumper. And right now, the Cardinals don't have it. I mean, Jose Martinez has done a fine job, but I don't think that you can justify all that movement of Carpenter potentially taking Wong's spot at second, taking a big dive defensively there, so that you can input Jose Martinez or Matt Adams, who's not hitting. And so if you went out and made a trade for a big bat and you had to stick him at first base, then I'm okay with it because you're expecting to have such a big boost to your offense. But if you don't have that offensive boost, I just don't see it making sense. And right now, you really don't have any reason to move Carpenter because Matt Adams he's gotten some run over the first couple of weeks, but it just hasn't been justifiable to keep his bat in the lineup at the expense of so much defense.
John Mozeliak mentioning yesterday, we played the audio in our first segment, that anything is on the table. So the 314 holding John Mozeliak to his word, texting in, get Mike Trout.
Yeah, I mean, if anything's on the table, that's probably the first order of business, right? Go out and get Trout, or you know what, just trade for Machado or Arenado right now.
Well, you know, Machado's having a rough start. He's batting below 200.
I don't care about that.
Maybe
we can get him. The Cardinals come in and grab him while he's got a low value. They can trick the Baltimore general manager into thinking, he's just an average player.
He's a declining asset.
Ignore
that he's 24.
I mean, what do you guys want? Luke Weaver, Matt Adams. I think that's fair.
Machado did hit his second home run of the year.
He'll be okay.
Yesterday in Toronto, I'm not sure if you saw the highlight. Machado is a right-handed hitter, and he took an outside pitch and hit it off the right field foul pole. So it was a sight to see.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. And also his defense, you know, he's a complete player, and he can play shortstop too. So I think it'll be interesting to see. We've talked about this before, but when it comes time to, if he waits it out till free agency, and we expect Bryce Harper will do the same, who will command the higher salary? Because Machado is at a premium position compared to Harper, but both those guys can absolutely mash, so we'll have to wait and see. It'll be interesting, though. Will their salaries approach $300 million, $350 million, even more? We've heard rumors of Bryce Harper being the $500 million guy before he kind of had a decline in his numbers last season, so we'll have to wait and see.
That's Brendan Schaefer. I am Brian Hoffman. We owe you some Blues talk. They are in the postseason, after all, and they're actually winning in the postseason. They have a longer winning streak going right now than the Cardinals do. Brendan Schaefer, why they've won, at least in the postseason, 3 straight games, and potentially we might know our second-round matchup already, barring a collapse by one of the two parties.
Careful, careful.
But, I know. But before we go to break, I do want to tell you about the Bomarito Automotive Group, who sponsors our show content here on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Audis, Infinities, Cadillacs, Volkswagens, Fords, Toyotas. They have it all at the Bomarito Automotive Group. Log on to bomarito.com. Check out their new and pre-owned inventory. You can also read the column that Frank Bomarito has in the Post-Dispatch every weekend. And also want to give some love to Westminster Christian Academy, 314-997-2900. If you have a son or daughter looking for a high school and grade school and trying to get them a nice little education, send them to Westminster Christian Academy. Actually, they're 7th through 12th grade secondary school, so even a 6th grader can look ahead to their beautiful town and country campus. We'll have some Blues talk coming on the other side of this timeout. They host the Minnesota Wild in Game 4 tomorrow night, and some interesting developments last night in Nashville as well that are worth keeping an eye on. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box, broadcasting live from the McBride & Son Home Studio on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.